You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 269. And it is the Galway Downs preview show for you listeners. And we will be talking about a few of the key contenders you need to look out for a little bit later on as we look to one of the premier events on the West Coast. But first of all, I have a man with me who is in charge of the cross-country courses this weekend. A very warm welcome to the show, Clayton Fredericks.
Hi, how are you?
Clayton, thank you so much for coming on, because I appreciate you're a busy chap as you prepare to get everything sorted for the competition ahead. It's your first year as course designer at Galway Downs. For anybody that isn't familiar with the venue, just tell us a little bit about the terrain and the course and what's in store in 2020.
Yeah, sure. This is my first year as the course designer at Galway, but it's not, I've been to Galway quite a bit in the past, certainly. I've actually ridden there as well, so that combined with training the Canadian hopefuls for lead up to some championships and Rio Games, so I've been out to the site quite a lot, so I know it fairly well, and I've actually been long-term friends with Rob Kellerhouse. We both were on the FEI committee at the same time for 4 years, so it was a interesting ask to be involved there, mainly due to I think Jay not being able to get there due to COVID and things. But you know, it's a unique place because it was originally set around a racetrack in Temecula. It's predominantly flat, although there is a little bit of undulation, and there's some very interesting topography that they've created over the years. So, it developed quite a long way, and we've had an interesting sort of development with the new owner of the property, who started to do in the center areas, in the middle areas of the course, they've completely irrigated it. Anyone who's been to California knows how dry it can be, and most of the tracks out in California are on a manufactured sandy going, where they machine over it and really sort of influence the track. So the exciting part is through the sort of negotiations with me being new there, and Rob and the owner, we were able to sort of say that what we really need is a designated track for the major events, the three and the four stars, and so that's what we've developed this time. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different to what people have seen in the past. We're going to be able to develop this track over time. Rob and his team will be totally in charge of maintaining the ground and the going, and so that should be a good thing. It means we can leave the grass a little longer and, you know, well water it and keep it as a designated track.
That's really exciting for the event for the future as well. Can I ask you, you sort of touched upon it there with COVID, logistically, how difficult has it been, and how have you found it in the build up to an event? What's different to how you would normally work on a course going into a major competition to 2020?
I suppose just time frame. Normally I'd probably like a few more visits, setting out the tracks and everything. But we were a little bit, with the changes of course design, we were under a little bit of pressure, but very lucky that Bert Woods is super experienced, and he's been at Galway for a long, long time. And between us, we were able to you know, plot out some a really good track, I believe. And you know, he's been very, very helpful in getting me up to speed with everything, and you know, sort of informing me of what works in different areas and what, you know, and stuff. So that's been very helpful.
And in terms of what's in store on the courses, if we focus on the 4-star long for a moment, what do you think is going to be the outcome of that? The time going to be tight? Do you think it's a tough track? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think traditionally they haven't really roped the course much. So you were sort of trying to keep the riders, you know, on the route that the course designer was trying to keep you on, just by placement of the jumps. What I wanted was that we actually roped the, in fact, I think 90% of the course will actually be roped. So the track is outlined there. Then we can actually just use put our combinations and our jumps in places that we lend themselves to the particular fence, rather than trying to use the jumps to keep riders from cutting corners, so to speak. So I think because of that, I will be able to, literally stop riders cutting the corners and be able to sort of make the time a little tighter. Traditionally, I think the time's been relatively easy to get out there. Well, that's certainly what the information I'd got, you know, from the people that were sort of involved in giving me the bit of a brief for what to do. So I think that's going to be a bit tighter this year. And we had a great day out there, actually. Mark, because it's a new course designer, USCA insists that we have a course advisor as well. That was Captain Mark Phillips. Mark and I actually never worked together on the course, and him and I had a great day out there. And just wanted to make sure that the course was up to height, and certainly up to standard. So that it would allow for the US team to have some of their premier riders out there and give them good selection opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like it is going to be a good track. It's actually the West Coast are hosting another leg of the Adequan Futures Team Challenge, which we spoke to Eric and Leslie about a couple of episodes ago. Listeners, if you haven't heard that, go back and take a listen, because it's really interesting to get an insight into the dynamic of how the team works, and all roads leading, of course, to what we hope will be Tokyo 2021. The Keller House team, Clayton, have done an incredible job. They've also been awarded the 3-star long championships, which should have been at Fair Hill this year. They've been working really, really hard on the facilities of the event going into the autumn fixture as well, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, lots of things have changed out there, part of which we've been involved from my other company with FEI Stabling. That certainly helped lift his events out there. And, I think people are going to get quite a big surprise when they visit the event.
A big surprise in a good way, absolutely. As a course designer, because obviously you've had an incredible career as a rider, as a coach, and now as a course designer, what are you looking for when you set a challenge, whatever level it may be? What do you want to see from your courses, and what do you want people to learn from your courses?
Well, I think I want them to be challenging and testing, but I've always tried to make anything that I've anything I've created as far as the course to be, you know, flowing and good on the horse's legs wise, and trying not to make things too tight and twisty. Sometimes you know, the courses might seem quite twisty, but I try to make it so that it's it's you know, there's nothing really too hard an angle to come back to. Just trying to keep everything flowing, and trying to keep the riders on their toes. But you know, I really want a horse friendly course.
I think that, to be honest, is a really, really important trait from a course designer's perspective of making sure that they come home with a good experience. It never hurts to make the riders think about things a little bit harder every so often. Can I ask you, if you had to say which made you more nervous, jumping a course or designing a course for other people?
Look, honestly, I do take the course design, you know, very seriously. And, you know, I think jumping the courses myself, riding myself, you know, I always feel like, you know, look, it's in my hands. You know, I can make decisions on what horse I'm riding. Sometimes when you're the course designer, you can create the jumps and the course, but you don't always, it's not always in your power to know who's out there and who's trying to have a go at this. So I'd have to say that it's actually more nerve-wracking watching the first few horses go around your courses than it is riding myself.
It's funny. Yeah. I think I've spoken to a few course designers that say exactly the same thing, because I suppose you're relying on other people to be able to rise to the challenge that you've set them. In terms of what's in store for the future, you are still competing very much at top level. I know the plan this year, pre-COVID, pre-everything changing, was Kentucky. Is that still on the cards going into 2021?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got two horses heading to try on for the four star there.
Mm-hmm.
The four star long, and then yeah, next year no doubt we'll be heading to Kentucky. Fingers crossed, everything's on track for that. And yeah, I mean, I suppose I've got as good a horses as I've ever had, and yeah, you know, just got to lay down some of the top performances now, just maybe get consideration for Tokyo.
It's going to be a really exciting year going into 2021. In terms of this year and all the changes, how has life been at Team Frederick's Equestrian? Because you've welcomed a new addition to the family as well, along with Lisa, in Hunter, who is 8 months old, is he now?
He's 8 months, yep. Yeah.
And how is life with a newborn again?
It's been good. It's been good. You know, the few nights that we've had fairly restless sleep, but he's been a good boy, you know, and Lisa's been a fantastic mother. And allowed me to get as much sleep as I can during the night. So, you know, it hasn't really interfered too much with the work that we're doing. I mean, we're incredibly busy. Like, you know, surprising, you know, in this COVID year, we've sold a lot of horses and the stabling business is going very well, you know, and I'm still managing to find time just to compete the top level horses as well. So, you know, actually it's been hard because planning has been difficult. You know, mm-hmm. We're always changing and, you know, logistics of running an eventing team is always tough as it is. But when you combine that with trying to organize stabling, going to all these shows and, you know, and then trying to fit in courses design on top of it. I mean, really, this year's been way busier than I'd probably ever hoped when I moved to the US. So, you know, that's good because business is going well and yeah, everything's moving forward. But yeah, we have found it pretty tough. And then, you know, on top of the fact that that's the thing that's affected us is, you know, having a baby, but not having family around to really assist is being tough as well. And we've got lots of friends that offer to help, but, you know, it's not the same as having your mother-in-law or your mother, you know, being able to look after them and I suppose it's been tough not being able to even have Ellie over here. Normally, you know, she would be over every holiday, and I haven't seen her since, well, I've spoken to her obviously regularly, but haven't seen her since January, so that's been hard.
It's not been an easy year, but by all means, I mean, a top event team, course designing at top level, a new baby into the mix as well. It is plenty going on. Can I just ask you for a word on Ellie as well? Because obviously I'm based over in the UK and she has been making a real name for herself over here. She stepped up to intermediate level and she's getting herself a really nice team of horses as well.
Yeah, you know, she had a great first intermediate, jumping double clear, and I think, I mean, it's lovely to see all that, and we're sort of involved, but I haven't been able to be real part of it because just, you know, I can't come over and go to the shows and see her ride. And as I say, normally she's over here and she's riding horses when she comes to stay. So it's been a little bit tough not being a part of that. I mean, thankfully, a lot of the events have been doing a bit of live streaming, and so there's opportunities to sort of watch it through that, but it's not the same, you know.
No, it's really not. Do you think when in future, when COVID is gone, which at the moment feels like a long time away, and she is back over in the States, we might see her competing on US soil as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sort of hoping that eventually she will see how fantastic the winter season can be over here. And certainly we've got no shortage of horses for her. So, it'd be great if she could. And I think, look, you couldn't have a better situation with a yard in Ocala, Florida, and a yard in the UK to be able to have an eventing career. So let's hope eventually, or when she finishes school, obviously, that she might consider sort of coming over and doing winter circuit here, and then back for the summer in the UK.
Well, there you go, listeners. There is a young rider for you to look out for in the future, Ellie Fredericks. Hopefully we will see her very soon. But Clayton, thank you so much for talking to us about Galway Downs and what is in store this weekend. We can't wait to see how it all plays out. But thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, no worries. And look, I just wanted to say how much we've enjoyed all your commentary and work. You do a great job. And, you know, you're a great asset to our sport. So thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind. You make me blush, Clayton. You make me blush.
I don't know if you heard him in the background, but I think Hunter agrees.
Thank you very much. And hi, Hunter, as well. Listeners, we will now turn our attentions. A huge thank you to Clayton, but we will now turn our attentions to a few of the ones to watch this weekend. Well, it was really good to hear from Clayton. And now we've got an insight into what is in store for our riders this weekend. It is only fair that we take a look at some of the key contenders. And with me, I have Dan Van from Equa Ratings, who is going to crunch some numbers. I hope. Dee, how are you?
I'm ready to crunch some numbers for you, Nicole. Yeah. I'm ready. Yeah, I'm excited.
It's a really good field, actually, for Galway. Can we talk about what previously it has taken to win the 4-star long format at the venue, because it's run there since 2010. So we've got a good few years of data to look at. What does it take to win?
I mean, the key here is to try and avoid saying start on a really low dressage and try and finish on it. Winners here, I would say, have started probably... they're probably all in around the 30 mark, if I'm being fair. I think the only one to break, well, a couple of them have broken 30. I think Philip Dutton back in 2015 on Fernhill Fugitive was 28.9. and James Allison a couple of years ago, or 2017 maybe, on Happenstance was a 28.9. But other than that, you're kind of in those low 30s. So if I think you're in with a shout once you, if you can get a 20 start. But the, I suppose the key one, Nicole, is it's going to be about being fast. And I think that's what we've got to try and keep an eye out for this weekend. I know we say that a lot.
It'll be interesting because I know Clayton thinks the time is going to be tougher this time. But we have got a very high quality field, and the likes of Boyd Martin, Philip Dutton, you know, they're taking advantage of those USET Foundation Award grants that mean that they've been helped with some of their travel to bring some of their top horses over to the West Coast to compete up against the likes of Tammy Smith and Erin Kellerhouse and people like that. So it is a very, very good field. So I think we'll be seeing people chase the clock down. But because the course has changed slightly, it's a bit of an unknown quantity as to how that's going to be. I think Clayton was playing it cool. I think it's going to be a fairly tough time. But I just mentioned there, actually, a former winner in Philip Dutton, the only other person in the field that is a former four-star long winner at Galway is Amber Levine. And they would be looking to join James Alliston, who's the only person who's won it more than once, and he has won it three times. Do you want to start? James Alliston won it in 2011, 2012, and 2017 on three different horses.
And to complete the challenge, what were the horses?
I'm going to say that I can't even pretend to have known all three. I've got it written in front of me. I can't even just fire it off.
I would be lying.
People would know. Jumbo's Jake in 2011, Tivoli in 2012, and Happenstance, you just mentioned, in 2017. I couldn't pull that off. But, you know, Buck Davidson has won it, Petite Flower in 2013. The great Cambalda with Jenny Branigan won it back in 2010. In the first year that it ran. He's such a cool horse. So it's interesting. The one thing I would say, like you just mentioned, only one of the winners has ever picked up time penalties in the cross country. Otherwise, they've all gone inside the time. So that'll be interesting. Let's talk about a few of the ones to watch this weekend, because we have run the Accreditations Prediction Centre, and Philip Dutton, surprise, surprise, D, is the man who comes out with the biggest win percentage.
Yeah, he has the top chance according to this. But to be honest, when I looked at it, there's not really much between them. Philip on Fernhill Singapore and Boyd Martin on Long Island Tea, I would say. Really nothing to split them. Bit of a head-to-head. And then you'd say Boyd's other horse, Luke 140, following up pretty close behind. So overall, you'd say Boyd probably more likely to come out on top as a rider. Philip, if he is going to do it, it's going to be on Fernhill Singapore by the looks of it. But I would say tight. And then you still, we'll come to her, I'm sure, but you still have to count Liz Halliday Sharp and Cooley Quicksilver, who are not going to be too far behind. And Liz is having such an incredible season as well that, you know, confidence is going to be high going into this. But yeah, you'd say between those four, I would say. Four horses, three riders.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because actually a few of those big horses coming across, we would have perhaps seen at the Fairhill Five Star, but obviously hasn't run this year. Yeah. So they're making the trip to the West Coast, but they have experience at four-star long format already. Fernhill Singapore was he was top 10. He was fifth at Fairhill last year in the long format four-star there. He's won at the level below this year. And I mean, there's no better man on board, Philip, a legend. And actually, if you haven't already, then go and take a listen to the little bonus episode that was released on the OSEA podcast last week from the Equiratings Eventing podcast with Philip, because he talks all about his career. It's really, really interesting. If I may say so myself, I'm rather blowing my own trumpet there, aren't I? But it's very interesting. Listen, Boyd Martin, if you had to pick between the two of his horses, Dan, so he's got Long Island Tea, and he also has Luke 140. So Long Island Tea has a 20% win chance, Luke 140 is 17%. So nearly 40% win chance to Boyd on his two rides. make a case for one of those as to which you think would be his better chance.
I think I'm going to go with Luke.
Are you?
Yeah, I think so. I have to be so careful on these shows because, as you know, I get in trouble if I come on and I say, yeah, they're definitely going to win and this person's definitely not going to win. So I'm trying to be as kind of careful and as reserved as possible here. But both of them would need to show something more around speed, I would say. In terms of, you know, what I mentioned earlier, starting low, I think Luke is going to be well able. He is stepping up here and he hasn't really done many four-star shorts. I think he's done one four-star short and that was with Philip. So experience would be a big question mark there. And I think in their last long format, which was with Malin Peterson back at Varsfeld in a three-star long back in 2018, that was the last time they had a pole. So I don't know if we would be thinking, certainly some question marks around experience and some question marks probably around, I mean, it's maybe a little bit hard on one long format, but we just don't have that much to go with in terms of current form. I just wonder if there's anything there on jumping on the final day because they have jumped clear in all of their recent short formats. So, God, I was meant to make a case for Luke. It sounds like I've made the opposite there. But I would say absolutely have the ability to do a great dressage test, get off the mark. I would keep an eye on time. Depending on how tight that time is going to be, there would be maybe a little question mark around what happens there. And then jumping clear, maybe a little question mark around jumping on the last day. They've never been to a four-star long. And actually, this will be their first four-star at all with Boyd. I mean, massively experienced. You're not going to be thinking that's a problem, but just something to keep in mind. So maybe over the course of that long diatribe, I've actually turned away from Luke.
And you're going to Long Island. I would say, so like you said, Luke 140 is stepping up to level for the first time. Long Island T has won at the level previously. He actually won in 2018 at New Jersey, and he was the runner-up at Fairhill in the National Championships back in 2018 as well. Has had some time off, has been very lightly campaigned over the last two seasons. So that would be a bit of a question mark for me. But again, he has not been, I mean, his last three, four, five, six, seven runs have all been in the mid-20s with a couple of late 20s thrown in there. So I think we could be looking at a possible dressage leader in him. And I would fancy Boyd's chances with Long Island T to be staying on it. I'll be very interested to see. Who else? You mentioned Liz Halliday-Sharp. Now, Derm, she has been on incredible form from what of the 2020 season that we have had, hasn't she?
She has more international wins than any rider in the world, would you believe? She is on 7 international wins this year. So yeah, it's just been an incredible season.
To put that into context, last year, Piggy March had the most international wins in a season and she had 15, is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
And we've lost half the season this year.
Correct.
If probably more than half the season. So actually, Liz would have been challenging that territory in theory. Yeah. Or should be on track to it.
Well, to give you more context, so Piggy had 15 last year as, you know, the most we've ever seen on record in an international season. But to give you context, Ingrid Klimke last year in a full season had 7 international wins. Michael Young last year in a full season had 7 international wins. And they were kind of 2 and 3 last year. So 2019 full season, Ingrid and Michael are only matching what Liz has done in, you know, a very condensed, very difficult 2020 season so far. I think it's an incredible achievement. 7 international wins. Nobody else has more. Is it Oliver Townend, I think, will have 5? No, yeah, Oliver has 5. There's quite a few, actually, now with 5. Tommy Smith actually has 5 as well. Tom Carlisle, Sophie Loeb, who we saw last week win at Le Leon, Peggy French, who we've talked about last year with 15, this year with 5. Michael and Ingrid, who we talked about last year with 7, this year with 5. Greta Busacker, who we've talked about on the Eventing podcast a lot, with Scrabble 15 in Germany with 5 international wins. But Liz sitting on top of that with 7 international wins this year. And yeah, an incredible season. And look, I want to come back and talk about Philip and Fernhill Singapore in a moment, because I think we can definitely pick holes in both of chances. I mean, I think you're right on dressage leader, but with that lightly campaigned Long Island tee with the potential for time penalties, I would say the door is open here for Liz. I didn't probably realize it until I really began to dig into those numbers. I think Cooley Quicksilver has a great chance here.
I'm really interested by his form in recent. So he's been sort of on the radar for a good while, and he went very well at Buccalo last year, which was his first long format 4-star. But, you know, he's formerly been top 10 at Le Leon d'Angers in the 7-year-old World Championships back in 2018. He's very much been on the radar moving up the levels. Now, my question mark for him is he has actually only had one clear jumping round in his last 4 internationals. But prior to that, he had a run of 12 clear show jumping rounds. So I just would want to see them return to form in that final phase, because I don't think there'll be too much movement. There won't be room for too many mistakes on the leaderboard in the show jumping. So that would be just something to watch. Very capable of jumping clear, but...
They're probably not going to start as low as some of Liz's horses, would you think? You know, like, we've grown so used to seeing probably De Niro and a couple of those, you know, being well able to start in the mid-20s. Whereas I think they have done it this year at a 4-star short a couple of runs ago on a 26.1. But more often than not, you're in around that 30 to 33 mark. And as you say, you've added a pole in a few of these. So God, I'm talking myself out of every horse here at the moment.
Stop doing that. It's because we are yet to come on to who I think will top the podium. We'll talk about that in a second. But I would say that Liz Halliday-Sharp and Cooley Quicksilver are leading the campaign for Team Eric, who has a faultless record in the Adequan USCF Futures Team Challenge, which will be taking place this weekend as well. Team Leslie is represented by Charlotte Babbitt, Rebecca Brown and Tammy Smith, who we'll talk about in a second. But Team Eric is Liz and Emily Libby and Sophie Click. So they're the three across the 3-star long and the 4-star long as well. So Liz and Tammy sort of leading the charge. And actually, Tammy's horse is the one that I wanted to mention, because she has an incredible record at Galway. She has won 7 times at the venue since 2010, including the 4-star short class a couple of years ago. Admittedly, she comes forward, yes, with 2 horses, but 2 perhaps not of her first string, so to speak. But the one that I really wanted to mention was actually Passepartout, who she is riding for her daughter, Kaylorna, who is currently expecting a baby. So Tammy has taken over the ride. Now, this horse has a faultless cross-country record, admittedly from limited internationals. He's only had 6 internationals. And it is his first 4-star long format, but they stepped up at Twin Rivers in the 4-star short with Tammy on board. They won there with a sub-30 dressage and 3.2 time penalties, but that was by far the quickest. So it's obviously a horse that is capable of going quickly. Tammy, no better lady on top. She knows the venue, and she will be flying the flag for the West Coast Riders very, very enthusiastically, I'm sure. So I think this horse has a great chance this weekend, and will perhaps be flying a little bit under the radar in terms of their win chance and everything else, just because of lack of experience and lack of partnership. But make no mistake, she'll know the horse at home. I'm absolutely sure of it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing them.
I must say, you've done well there. You tricked me into like the top of the prediction center. You led me down the road. And then, boom, you hit me with Passepartout. You're so right. I think this is
a nice chance. Isn't it?
And then you're adding in Tammy's like 7 times at Galway winner, including that 4-star short in 2018. I think you're right. I think the prediction center and the numbers are overlooking the fact that Tammy's now sitting on this, and what, they've been sub 30 already at four-star level this season. Start good jumpers. We've picked holes in my initial picks. Good shout. Very impressed. Tammy Smith. Yeah.
Yeah. She's been in very, very good form actually. And yeah. Her team of horses are looking in great form as well, which always helps. So I would say she's got a really good chance. Erin Kellerhouse, who is on home turf, so to speak. So husband Rob is sort of leads the Kellerhouse team and putting on Galway Downs. And we were talking to Clayton earlier in the show about the incredible investment and time, money, resource, everything that is going into making this venue develop for the future. And I have no doubt that she would dearly love to put in a really strong performance here. And Woodford Reserve is only a 9-year-old, stepping up to 4-star long for the first time, but hasn't been out of the top 5 in 9 completed internationals, has never had a cross-country jumping fault, is generally very reliable in the first phase, so has been sub 32 in their last sort of 6 runs and into the 20s easily the last 2 attempts. So I think she would have a very good chance for a podium finish with Woodford Reserve. And this is a horse that's Irish bred and really, really talented for the future. Definitely one to watch. So look out for them. She's missing an elusive win on this horse's sort of record. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4. He's had 5 seconds from 10 international starts. He's yet to take the top spot. So she would very much love it if it was this weekend, I'm sure. And there will be a huge home crowd. If there is crowds, COVID, I forgot COVID there for a second. There would be a hugely enthusiastic home team cheering her
small,
on.
A small, excited crowd if the home favorite did it. You're right. A lot of second place, a lot of podiums. Stepping up, I guess, is the question. What happens at this level? But I would agree. Yeah, another good podium pick.
Okay, you know I'm going to ask you for a podium term. Who do you think will be on the top spot?
It's difficult. What's your feeling on Phillips Fernhill Singapore? What do you think?
You can never write off Phillips.
Well, he's the favourite. Like,
so you never can write off him. Personally, I'm going with a couple of the others. I'm going to keep my podium. Well, do you know what? I'll tell you my podium. I am going to say, let me just refresh. I'm going to say that the win is going to go to Tammy Smith, Patsy Partout. I'm going to say that Boyd and Long Island Tea are second.
Oh, wow.
And Erin Kellerhouse, Woodford Reserve, is going to be third.
Phillip's not on the podium.
Nope.
What do you think happens?
I hadn't got that far. I'm not sure. I hadn't got that far.
I mean, it's a long time since Fernhill Singapore knocked a pole. And like, he's been at the level before. Nah, follow the numbers there. Fernhill Singapore and Philip Dutton are going to win this. Tammy Smith with an excellent pick from Nicole and Passepartout are second. And Long Island Tea gets too many time penalties after being dressage leader and comes third. Erin, she's going to be in the top 5 on her debut at the level. Also a great showing. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I would admit that I did just go and have another look at Fernhill Singapore, and I think you're probably right. Follow the numbers. He's had 14 consecutive clear jumping rounds in the show jumping. Which is incredible, but I mean,
his dressage is pretty good as well. Like he won't lead, like, but if he can just get somewhere around a 30 mark, like he doesn't need to lead. Like he's,
I would say you do need to go back to a Carla 2017 to see him go inside the time cross country.
And I think only one winner, Nicole, of this event has actually added time penalties.
Yes, you've got to go.
That's
quick.
Why I think those time penalties are going to be critical.
It was
Barbara Crabble.
Yes, in 2014. with Ever Ready. Yeah, absolutely. And she added 3.6, but jumped to double clear. Okay. I'm looking forward to this. Listeners, we hope you are looking forward to following Galway Downs as well. Dan, thank you for coming on and for looking through the field for us.
No problem. No problem. Looking forward to it now. I've got my Philip t-shirt on. I'm ready.
Okay. I should actually say I feel really bad now because I love this horse, but I've missed Jolly Bow.
And Bennett.
We can't forget him. Absolute legend. And is the only horse, he's been top 20 at Kentucky, so he's got 5-star form, is the only horse competing for the second time. So he competed at Galway back in the 4-star long format in 2015. So don't discount Jolly Bow as well. It's a good field. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really, really good lineup. And listeners, we hope you enjoy watching how it all unfolds. But Dee, thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.
And a huge thank you to Clayton as well. We'll be watching his courses with interest throughout the weekend. But listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the USCA official podcast, and we'll be back very soon.